Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is a TEDx speaker whose talk on cultivating unconditional self-worth has over 700,000 views. She's a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in treating people of color through individual, group, and couples therapy. She has an online course designed to help people connect to their unconditional self-worth. Her name is Dr. Adia Gooden, and I think that you will enjoy meeting her. So Adia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been looking forward to this interview. I think we started talking, a few months ago when I first reached out. And I was trying to think about it. I think it was one of my previous guests. He found your TED Talk. And he's like, hey, you need to listen to this. And that's how I found you, I think. So, and then of course we shared the DePaul connection. So that's cool. But unconditional self-worth. I love that. It was intriguing. Can you share with us a little bit about what led you to want to study this?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I think I started struggling with self-worth and feeling unworthy, feeling unlovable when I was a kid. And, you know, I would feel left out of friend groups. I would feel lonely. And my conclusion was, okay, I must be unworthy, right? There must be something wrong with me. And so I decided, my type A personality made me decide, okay, we'll just be perfect. We'll just get the best grades. We'll get into the best schools. We'll be the perfect friend. And that is going to make me worthy. And then I'll be loved and accepted and I'll be happy, right? Like that was the sort of conclusion that I reached. And so I set off to try to do that, right? And a lot of times that sort of worked. Like I did get good grades. I did get into great schools. But when it didn't work, when I had a failure or I felt rejected or something didn't work out well, I was crushed. Like I just felt like, you know, I was totally unworthy. I felt like this was evidence that I was not good enough. And so I really continued this cycle of overworking, of anxiety, of perfectionism up through graduate school. And I think, you know, getting my PhD, I remember defending my dissertation and just feeling empty afterwards. I passed the dissertation defense, but I felt empty and I just started bawling.
Really?
And, you know, looking back, it's like, yeah, because I had gotten to this ultimate academic goal, right? Getting your PhD, and it didn't work. It still didn't work. It still didn't make me feel worthy. And so I realized that in sort of when I reflect on my story, I can see all of the ways I tried to get to my unconditional self-worth. And I didn't really know what I was trying to get at, but what I was trying wasn't working. And then I am a clinical psychologist and I've worked for several years at a top university in the country in their counseling center. So I was working with these high achieving students, similar to how I was, and they were in this amazing school and struggling with their self-worth. And so I was able to put all of that together and say, you know, there's something here. It's not just me. This is a pattern. Many, many people are trying to prove their worth through achievement, through relationship status, through all of this, are feeling not good enough, are feeling anxious, are feeling stressed, are feeling overworked. And that's really what led me to sort of explore what would it look like to embrace your unconditional self-worth? How do you get there? And how does that shift things?
Yeah. And you know, Adia, I think that a lot of people can really identify with that, you know, and especially when you're talking about the perfectionism. I mean, it's like, well, if I can just do this or do that, then, and it's the wrong focus. Cause then, like you said, you have a PhD, and then to feel empty, like, that's gotta be, I don't know, like a little heartbreaking and maybe mm-hmm. a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Cause it's like, I thought this would work. This was supposed to work. Why isn't it working? Right. And so there's choices people have, right? Some people can say, well, it must be me. Mm-hmm. Then I'm the problem. There's no way for me to be worthy. But my suggestion is actually it's the system. Actually, it's the lie that your worth is outside of you. And if you sort of opt out of that, then you will be able to connect to your unconditional self-worth.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know one of the things that intrigued me in your TED talk, you talked about the distinction between self-esteem and self-worth. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So self-esteem is based on our abilities and accomplishments and things we believe we can achieve. I think of it as sort of the doing, what we do in the world, our skills. Like I think for a lot of my life, I had high self-esteem and low self-worth, right? So I felt like I can do academic things. I know how to get the work done. I know how to like work hard and like, you know, make it happen, the push, right? And that's often based on self-esteem. And self-esteem doesn't have to be a bad thing, but when we just focus on self-esteem, we often are missing something deeper. And the deeper thing is self-worth, right? Self-worth is, how do you feel about yourself at the core without all of the outside things, without the degrees, without looking a certain way, without the clothes, the cars, et cetera? How do you feel about yourself? How do you treat yourself? Right. And I define unconditional self-worth as the belief that you deserve to be alive, to be loved and cared for, and to take up space. And so it's really about how do you relate to yourself? How do you take care of yourself? Do you believe you're worthy of all of that?
Yeah. That there's a big difference, you know, when you're talking about it, when you said the self-esteem, it's more based on the doing. Right. And, mm-hmm. and sometimes I would imagine sometimes we get caught up in the doing as a way to try to build our self-worth, but we're really working on on something different. And I know I want to get to eventually because you've got the four practices to develop unconditional self-worth. Wanted to explore a little bit more though. How does the low self-worth, how does that affect us?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it affects us in a whole host of ways, right? So low self-worth can look like overworking, right? Trying to prove your worth through like constantly working. You never take a break. You never sleep. You never have fun. You've always got to work. And you kind of can't sort of let yourself take a break. It can look like an intolerance for mistakes or failures. So you berate yourself every time you get something wrong. Every time you make a mistake, you are on yourself. You're talking to yourself in a way you probably would never talk to someone else. And maybe you wouldn't even tolerate someone else talking to you. You know, low self-worth can also look like imposter syndrome and holding yourself back, hiding and thinking, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy of success. My ideas aren't really good. I can't really do it. I'm going to hide. I'm going to play it small, right? I'm going to go through life sort of as a wallflower. So ultimately, I think the thing that breaks my heart the most about low self-worth is that it keeps people from shining and being their authentic selves and from really sharing their gifts with the world in a way that is aligned, not in a like overdoing it work way, but in a way that feels like natural and in the flow and just allows them to show up and really be themselves and contribute to the world from that place, not a place of lack, but a place where you're, you know, you're worthy, and then you want to show up and give from there.
Yeah. I mean, those are some pretty big things, you know, playing it small, which to me, I always think if we're playing it small, we're cheating the world of the gifts that we could be giving.
Yes.
And also when you said the way that we talk to ourselves, when I was in my late 20s, could have been early 30s. I was talking to a coach and my coach, and I was completely doing that whole thing, berating myself, blah, 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 you know, and she just interrupted me. And she's like, Bobby, would you ever talk to a friend the way you're talking to yourself? And you know what I realized in that moment was I wouldn't even talk to an enemy. And here I am saying this to myself. And I think, and I don't know why this has been on my mind so much recently, but I think sometimes when people hear self-talk, they think, oh, it doesn't really matter. I have a very different perspective. I think it matters a lot. What's your take on that?
Oh, it matters. It matters. I mean, what I encourage my clients to do is look at when you notice yourself criticizing yourself, when you're berating yourself, what happens next? And they usually say, well, then I'm demotivated. I don't want to do anything. I sit on the couch all day and watch Netflix. And then I beat myself up for doing that. And then I don't want to do anything. And then I think I'm a failure. And I go into a down spiral and I feel depressed.
Yeah.
That has a powerful impact. Right. And yeah. And often the discussion is how I'm encouraging people to be self-compassionate. And they're like, no, that's not going to work. And I say, well, what happens when you're critical? Mm-hmm. And when they look at it, they say, well, yeah, it's like, do you get the work done? Do you actually do what you want to do? Do you show up in the way you want to show up? And the answer is almost always, no, I don't. Mm-mm. And that helps people to see like, oh, this is not helping. I think that beating myself up is going to make me better, but it really doesn't work. And maybe if it works a little bit, it's not sustainable.
No, not for the marathon, not for the marathon of life.
No.
You mentioned there that it can lead to that downward spiral. And our brains are always listening into what we're saying, and they're not very good at discerning fact from fiction either. They believe the lies we tell about ourselves. But you said something there about depression. And I know in your TED talk, this really surprised me when you made the connection to depression and anxiety, and just that's significant. And I think you said, what did you say about depression? Like it's, was the number by the World Health Organization.
It's the number one disability in the world.
Depression.
Depression is the leading cause. At least, I gave the talk 3 years ago. So
yeah, at the time.
Right now, it might be COVID.
Might be COVID.
But you know what I mean? At the time, depression was the leading cause of disability, which is just, right? It's staggering, right? Like, no, I wouldn't have expected. When I found that, I was like, really? And I'm a psychologist. I'm like, it's not diabetes. It's not heart disease. It's not cancer. No, it is depression. And yes, right there. I'm not trying to say that low self-worth is the singular cause of depression, because there are many causes, biological, environmental, situational, right? Like, there are many causes. And what I have seen with my clients is that those who struggle with depression also struggle with low self-worth, that they feel really badly about themselves, right? That they beat themselves up. They engage in this self-criticism. They call themselves lazy. They're very harsh and critical. And what I also find is that when I help them connect to their unconditional self-worth, when they start forgiving themselves, practicing self-compassion, doing some of these things, that the veil of depression starts to lift.
Oh, interesting. That's really cool. Cause it's kind of heartbreaking. You know, what you're describing, it's heartbreaking. So what are those, you know, the four practices that you talk about?
Yeah. So the first practice is, self-forgiveness. So many of us don't feel worthy because we hold on to past mistakes. We say, I made this failure. I, you know, made this mistake. That makes me unworthy. That is unforgivable, right? And so we hold on to this thing that happened in the past. And we often continue to punish ourselves, right? We continue to berate ourselves about it. We withhold, we say, I can't do that. I can't experience that. I can't have that positive thing because I'm a bad person, because I did this when I was however, whatever age. And so the process of forgiveness involves looking at what happened, right? Acknowledging it, right? Acknowledging, you know, what you have responsibility for, what you learned from the situation, acknowledging the pain it caused, because often there's a lot of pain associated with the things that we need to forgive ourselves for. And then it's releasing it so that you can move forward freely, right? You can carry the wisdom, but you don't have to carry the burden and the pain. We all make mistakes. It is human, right?
Yeah.
It's the learning that we do in the process that's valuable, but continuing to punish yourselves for yourself for years after a situation has happened really doesn't serve you. And it also doesn't serve the world.
No, not at all. So you said something there, and I remember reading it too. Carrying the wisdom, not the burden and the pain. Can you speak to, mm-hmm. to carrying the wisdom and then, yeah, and how the difference between that and the burden and the pain?
You know, so I had a mistake that I made in, I was in my early mid 20s. And basically, you know, part of it was my responsibility, part of it was the other person's responsibility, it was related to a relationship I was in. And what I learned from that, like it was a pretty big thing. It was heartbreaking. There was a whole lot, you know, going on. I go into it one of my podcast episodes, so I'm not going to tell this whole story here. But I, you know, for a long time, I just like carried it as like, I experienced shame. There's something wrong with me. I'm bad. I'm unlovable. Like all of these things that I just sort of put on like a backpack and carried around with me and felt like I just kind of suck as a human, right?
Oh, mm-hmm.
But the forgiveness involves, okay, let's take off the backpack and let's look in here and let's see, okay, what was that person's responsibility and what was my responsibility? Well, you know, I really could have and should have protected my boundaries better. And so a wisdom from that is, okay, Adia, you need to be really thoughtful about protecting your boundaries,
yeah.
right? Like if you feel like something's off, you need to say something, you need to get out of the situation, right? Like you need to protect your boundaries. You need to be thoughtful about who you're in a relationship with. You need to, right? Like don't rush into things, right? So that is the wisdom. Right? It's how would I do it differently if faced with a similar situation? Not, oh, I should have done this differently in the past. And I can't believe you did. It's okay. This was painful. This was hard. Here's what I learned. Here are the learnings that I'm carrying with me. That's the wisdom.
Yeah. I love that distinction because I think we've all done that, right? I mean, sometimes I'll be talking to someone and they're even kicking themselves over something that happened like when they're a kid. And it's like, newsflash, we're not the same people that we were back then. But I think that can be really hard. And when you speak of, you know, releasing it, I think, is that something people struggle with?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, self-forgiveness is hard work, right? Like it really requires, and actually I have a course helping people connect to their unconditional self-worth. And I actually put self-compassion before self-forgiveness because people need to have a foundation of treating themselves well before they can kindly and compassionately look at these past mistakes so they don't end up, you know, just beating themselves up more for the mistakes. But it's work. And part of the reason people hold on to these past mistakes is that they think it's protecting them. They think if I hold on to this pain, I will never forget and I will never make the same mistake. But really, it's just holding on to the pain. And just holding on to the wound. And so it's the shift in saying, okay, I'm rebuilding trust with myself to know that I am, again, taking the wisdom, taking the learnings, and that will keep me from making the same mistake in the future. So I can release this now.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the whole backpack analogy too, or metaphor. Mm-hmm. So is it something that if people are holding on to it, is it something that like, do they journal about this? Can they just, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, so I recommend, so there's sort of longer processes that I guide people through. So, you know, I think it can be helpful to, you know, reflect on the situation, to journal that, like sort of journal these steps. They're sort of included in the ebook that I think we'll link and share about. I encourage people to go through it. Like if somebody has experienced a pretty significant trauma or difficulty, it can be helpful to work with a therapist, right? Like if you're finding that you cannot connect to that self-compassion, it can be helpful to get some guidance or some coaching or some therapy in the process because you know, the self-forgiveness module in my course, like it's probably the most challenging module. And that's what I heard from students. And we got to meet and talk and I could coach people through it. So there are the steps. And, you know, I also encourage people to be patient with it and not like rush through it as though it's like check, 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 check. And then I'm done. Like, don't make it a to-do list, but a right. process sort of releasing something and understanding the situation.
Yeah. And before we go on to the next practice, because I know there are four of them, why is it so hard for people to be compassionate towards themselves?
You know, I think there's a number of reasons. So some people grew up with really critical parents, teachers, people who sort of berated them. So for some people, they've internalized, you know, a parental figure, like the voice, the critic's voice sounds like a parent, right? Mm-hmm. And as much as you wanted to like get away from that parent when you were a kid, turns out they got into your head and they're with you still.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I think for people of color, women, people from, you know, people who are LGBTQ, like people who are from groups that are sort of discriminated against, there are a lot of messages that you're not okay the way you are, right? Explicit and implicit messages that say you need to be different, act different, look different. And that can also, we can internalize discrimination. And then lastly, I think people confuse self-growth and development with self-criticism. The reality is that self-compassion is actually the best way to support our development and growth. And self-criticism hinders it. But people think if I beat myself up, that's going to help me to grow. That's going to help me to get further. And so people hold on to it as something that is going to help them achieve highly. And maybe it did push them in the past. But again, it's something that I don't think is sustainable. And I don't think helps people to show up as their best selves.
No, not even a little bit. You know, I've done a lot of coaching in the corporate world, and it makes me so sad. I can be, you know, observing someone in action. And I think, oh my goodness, they're doing such an amazing job. Like this could be like as close to perfect as you can get. And then we talk about it. I'm like, so, you know, what do you think about it? They instantly go to everything they didn't like. And I'm thinking, I thought it was like awesome, you know, so that really hits. And then the other thing you were talking about there, the voice of the critic and how we take that on. I had a therapist, this was years and years ago, because I grew up in, my mom was great. She also had some psychological issues. So every day was different. And some days it was amazing. And other days it was harsh, you know, verbally and physically. And I completely took that voice on. And it was my therapist who pointed out to me, she's like, you've taken that voice on and now you are abusing yourself. I was like, ouch. Mm-hmm. You know? But it was really, that was a big moment, you know, to recognize.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's great. So that was one. What's another one of the four practices?
So another one is sort of this being there for yourself, which is, you know, aligned with self-compassion. So it's this idea of, you know, when we're having a hard time, often we get into the self-criticism. We sort of kick ourselves when we're down. And so my suggestion is, how can you be there for yourself, right? Show up for yourself just as you show up for a friend, a partner, a loved one, right? How do you hold space for, okay, this is a hard experience. You're having a hard time. That's challenging. That's okay. That's human, right? Instead of saying, well, if you had done it differently, then you wouldn't have done this and da, 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 da. But just holding like, okay, that was a disappointment. Okay, that was a challenge. Okay, this is hard, right? Being there for yourself, being kind to yourself and encouraging to yourself, right? We can communicate to ourselves that we are worthy by treating ourselves well.
Yes. By treating ourselves well. That's huge. And I think a lot of times people, when they talk about, you know, like self-care or self-love, it's like, it's like, it's a nice to have. And it's like, no, it's kind of who we are at our, it seems like it's such a piece of our foundation, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. It's become sort of this like fluffy, you know, Instagrammable thing. But I think the core of our lives is our relationship with ourselves. And that's often sort of the most neglected relationship, right? We attend to other relationships. We think about how to grow them and build them and nurture them. And we often overlook our relationship with ourselves, right? And so this is about what is, you know, how do you get in right relationship with yourself? How do you show up for yourself as a loving and caring person who's encouraging and nurturing and yes, has standards and yes, holds yourself accountable, but does it in a kind and loving way, just as you would like other people to treat you.
Yeah. And I remember, I think it was both in your TED talk and something, and it was probably in your ebook that I read, you said that often we, when we face those difficult times, we abandon ourselves.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think I know what you meant, but can you tell me more about what that means?
Yeah. I mean, I think that looks like thinking, I'm done with you. Mm. Like, you're miserable. You suck. You're just lazy, right? It's those sorts of like, I'm done. Right? That's abandoning yourself, right? Like it's failing a test or not getting the promotion and being like, you're such a lazy idiot.
Oh.
Oh, right? But people say that to themselves. Like that's abandoning. That's like, you're already dealing with the disappointment of not getting a raise.
Yeah.
You're already feeling like, oh gosh, like I work for this hard or whatever. I try to, but then perfectionism got in the way, right? Like all of these things. And then you say, I'm done with, like, I'm done, right? That's the abandonment. Versus saying, okay, that is so tough. It is incredibly disappointing that this didn't work out as you wanted. And I still am here with you and I'm still here for you. And I still think you're worthy. And so let's give ourselves space to like process these emotions. And then we'll think about what happened. We'll think about what you can do differently next time. We'll maybe ask for some wisdom from other people. But right now, let's just attend to the fact that this is disappointing. But let's remember it. It doesn't make you unworthy.
Yeah. It's just an event.
Yes.
It's not who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's two. And then I think we talked about a little bit of the self-compassion. And I know you also talked about self-acceptance. Are those different?
Yeah, those are different. So the self-compassion and being there for yourself is sort of how you respond to yourself. I think particularly when you're having an emotionally challenging experience, the self-acceptance is about accepting yourself as you are, right? So much of our self-criticism and the reasons we feel we're unworthy is we think there's just something wrong with me. Like those other people might be worthy, but me, like I'm too much, I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm not enough. Yeah. I'm just not okay as who I am. And so what I challenge people to do with this piece is how can you start accepting the parts of yourself? Let's just start with the things you like, right? Similar to the example you just gave about someone doing things 99% well and coming back and being like, but the 1%, I did this and this and this and wrong.
Yeah.
How do you start to own, like, I'm a great speaker. I'm a great listener. I'm really organized. I tend to ask great questions, like owning your strengths and accepting that. And then you can move on to like, yeah, like there are these things that like are not my favorite parts about me, but I'm not going to beat myself up over it. Maybe there's growth that's an opportunity. And also I'm going to accept myself. That's sort of that process of self-acceptance.
Yeah. And that, you know, you're good enough as you are. You don't have to wait to feel like, okay, well, when I do X, then I'll be good enough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. And then finally, what is the fourth one?
The fourth one is to connect to supportive people. So, you know, I don't think that we should just totally outsource this, right? I do some couples therapy and there are challenges when, you know, partners are sort of totally outsourcing their sense of worthiness to their partner. Like that can create challenges. Right. Like it's problematic. Yeah. And loving and supportive and accepting people can really remind us that we're worthy and can really ground us in our worthiness, especially when we're having a hard time accessing that. So really sort of cultivating those healthy, supportive relationships, leaning into them, letting in the good, the positivity, the love. Don't like push it away and say, oh, I don't deserve this. You shouldn't do that. Don't, you know, never ask for help, but really allow yourself to be in relationship with other people who show you that you're worthy of love and care and respect and allow yourself to receive that.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. And I was chuckling there when you said I don't deserve that. You know, we keep those kind of things at arm's length. What happens if you have people in your life that are not that supportive? What do you do then?
Yeah, it's a good question. This is also something we work on in my course, which is sort of recognizing and releasing toxic relationships. And, you know, I think the first thing is to recognize it, right? To recognize this relationship is making me feel really unworthy. I feel like I'm getting intermittent affirmation or no affirmation. I'm being called names. Maybe it's abusive, right? Like recognizing like this relationship is toxic is the first step. Because often what happens, especially when we're struggling with low self-worth, is that we personalize it and we think I'm the problem, right? Like when you were even talking about your mom, I wondered if as a kid you thought on the day she was harsh, oh God, I must have done something that made her harsh today, right? Like usually, and as kids, we internalize, like even though they're adults in our life, it's like we must be the factor that's affecting our parents' mental health and how kind or harsh they are on that day. And so when we can sort of recognize, you know, it's the relationship dynamic that is toxic, that is the first step to saying, okay, is this a relationship I want to or can release? Like I'm going to end it. Or if it's a family member or someone you don't want to end things with, then it's a process of setting boundaries. How do you shift the boundaries in the relationship? That might mean you don't share your hopes and dreams with the person who always seems to be like, oh, that's not going to work. So you draw a boundary, right? Or somebody says mean things to you and you say, you know, it's not okay for you to speak to me that way. When you do, I'm going to leave the situation or I'm going to hang up the phone, right? Like you set new boundaries to start to shift the relationship.
Yep. I think, Adia, we could spend a whole episode or multiple episodes on setting boundaries.
Yes. I
mean, that was something I had to work so hard on, like my late 20s, early 30s, you know, when I was going through a lot of this stuff. And it can be painful, you know, but setting the boundaries, to me, it was a way of saying, I respect myself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, because I just got to a point where I'm like, if I'm allowing people to treat me this way, I'm essentially saying I don't respect myself. No wonder they don't respect me, you know?
It's
hard work, but man, is it worth it?
It is.
It's really worth it. Yeah. I love that you help people that way. Cause I think it's hard work. So one thing I wanted to ask you about too, I read it in one of your recent newsletters. And it was, and I talk about this too, and that's maybe it's why it caught my attention, but being our own hero, I think it's such an empowering concept. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, I think when we feel unworthy, maybe even sometimes when you don't feel unworthy, it's just easy to get caught up in sort of a victim mentality. Life is happening to me. Oh gosh, this happened and then this happened and then this happened and this person's doing that and that person, right? Like there's just sort of this dynamic of everything is happening to me and it leaves you feeling like I cannot do anything about it. Yep. The world sucks. There's nothing I can do. And when I talk about being your own hero, it's not to say that there aren't things outside of your control that are challenging, because there are, right? We cannot control everything, but we do often have more agency than we think we do. We do often have more choice than we think we do. And so in sort of small ways, being your own hero is saying, what are the choices I have in this situation? And how am I going to proactively make that choice? How am I going to take agency and shift my situation in the ways that are in my control? And then obviously there's large ways like, you know, I decided this job is not a good fit and I'm going to go out on my own because I want to share my gifts in another way, right? Like that's kind of a big manifestation of it. But even the little ways like I'm not going to be responding to emails after 6 p.m. Setting a boundary in that way can be being your own hero versus like I'm glued to the phone and everybody emails me until 10 p.m. and then I can't have an evening to relax and then I'm stressed and then blah, 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 right? Like there actually is a choice you can make in that situation. And yes, sometimes work gets overwhelming and there are specific periods, but you do have choice. You do have agency. So it's owning that, owning your power. And it really feels empowering when you can make choices, even if you make the same choice, right? At least you know you're making a choice. And that really can help people feel like, oh, I am in control of my life.
Yeah. And when I was chuckling, when you're talking about the, I get these emails all night long and it's like, who's picking up the phone? I mean, put the phone down. And of course, do emergencies come up? Absolutely. And I'm laughing about it because that's something that I had to do for myself as well. Cause it's like, I don't even know why it occurred to me one day. I'm like, but who's picking up the phone? Who's the one looking at it? And like, put it aside. And you know what I did is I just shared with my team members and I'm like, hey, I'm not checking my email after 6. And you know what the amazing thing was? The world didn't end.
Right. Right. Because that's often the fear. And this is also where it sort of ties back into self-worth, because if you feel your worth is dependent on your work, and I've always got to be there, I've always got to respond, I've got to be the perfect, I've got to, blah, blah, blah. It is so much harder to let yourself rest and to feel it's okay to set a boundary.
Yeah. And here's another thing. Like, I don't have to check my email from my phone when I first wake, when I'm still in bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. I could actually get up and have a cup of coffee and probably it'll be okay. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead.
And that's a big thing too, because I think so often we start our days in reaction.
Yes.
What email came in, I'm reacting to it. And then the whole day becomes reaction versus this is how I start my day. I exercise, mm-hmm. I meditate, I drink coffee, I drink tea. Like I'm intentionally setting and deciding how my day will begin and at least set the tone for the first 30 minutes. Right. If you have little kids, that's obviously harder. Right. But then you, at least you're not like, oh, this, you know, because emails, sometimes we get great emails and sometimes emails piss us off.
That's
and then
right.
That sets the tone for our day. So it's the choosing. It's the, I can decide how my morning starts and this is how I want it to begin.
Yeah. And I think that's so powerful. And what I'm thinking as you're talking there is it relates back once again to the self-worth. If we think that we're worth having that intention. The other thing I was laughing about there is what you said, if you have little kids, we have two puppies now. And that also kind of plays into it, because at 5:30, when the sun starts coming up, and he's a puppy, he's almost 90 pounds, right? He jumps up on the bed like, time to play. But you know what, idiot? Even there though, there's a choice. I can look at that as, oh my goodness, why won't he let me sleep? Or, oh my goodness, what a special time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a puppy forever.
Right. You can see the joy in it. And you can also say, okay, I know the puppy's going to wake us up at 5:30. So let me try to get to bed by 10.
Yeah.
So that by, you know, when he wakes us up, I'm like mostly rested, like almost ready to go. And that, you know, feels okay to wake up at that time.
Yeah. But again, to your point, and that's what I love about it, the choice, because we have more choice than I think a lot of times we recognize. Another thing I wanted to mention, this was when you were talking there, it was a guest I had a few weeks ago. She said, and she was a homeless teenager. I mean, her story is amazing. And she said the advice she gave her daughter was that when you face adversity in life, you need to love yourself enough to want to do more than survive, but you have to love yourself enough to thrive. And it was kind of coming back to me in some of this stuff that you were saying.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think it's really beautiful, right? Because I think, you know, if you think about parents raising kids and if a kid is experiencing a challenge, you know, the parent isn't going to be like, yeah, just survive it. Like that's, I'm not going to pour that much into you. Like just survive it. I mean, hopefully, right? Like a healthy parent, right? Like a healthy parent isn't going to be like, yeah, you survived. That's good enough. They're going to be like, okay, you survived. And now how do we boost you up and support you and empower you and nourish you and nurture you so that you can be your best self? And it's like, yeah, what would it look like to pour into yourself in that way, to not stop it. Like, well, I'm surviving. I'm okay. Right. Like so often people are like, I'm fine. I'm okay. It's good enough. Right. And struggling with anxiety and struggling with self-criticism and just eking by and exhausted. It's like, well, what would it look like to say, you know what, that's not good enough. I'm willing to pour into myself to get beyond this place of survival and to really enable myself to thrive.
Yeah. And I'm making a note of that because I was thinking, Why is it enough for us? Why is it okay for us to say to ourselves, well, you know, it's good enough. Don't we like deserve more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I love this topic because it's like the deeper you get into it, the more you see how it's connected to so many other things.
Right. Like the roots, it's like this tree that has roots that spread everywhere. Yeah.
It's like that real insidious ivy, right? Then you can't control kind of. This has been absolutely awesome. You mentioned that you have a course. Do you want to speak a little bit more about, and I know you've got a podcast, and tell us more.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. So I have a course called the Unconditionally Worthy Course, and it's a 7-week journey to unconditional self-worth. And so really I guide people through some of the pieces and practices that I've talked about today, and we go deeper in them and there's also a few more sort of modules about values, right? Because so often we're guided by fear instead of, you know, instead of our values. And so we help people shift with that. There's some on relationships. And so that's a course I'm running right now. We're wrapping it up. I will be relaunching it probably not until early 2022, but I'll probably offer something about self-criticism, letting go of self-criticism and embracing self-compassion between now and then, which I think is a topic that so many people really would find helpful. Yeah. So those are the courses. I have a podcast called Unconditionally Worthy. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. And it's really about sort of how do you understand self-worth? How do you embrace your unconditional self-worth and sort of the various areas of our life that self-worth impacts? And we just finished season one. There's 16 episodes, and then season two will launch in the fall. And I'll be doing interviews as well as solo episodes. And then people can go up to my website. It's www.dradiagooden.com. So that's DR and then my name, adiagooden.com. You can find the podcast there. You can learn a little bit more about the course and sign up for a wait list. And then I have the free ebook, which we've mentioned. So it's about four practices to connect with your unconditional self-worth. So we go through those four practices and you can, I think we'll link in the show notes. You'll also find it if you go to my website. And then once you sign up, you'll be on my email list. So you'll get the weekly emails from me that also support you on your self-worth journey.
Yeah.
And also lastly, I guess on Instagram at Dr. Adia Gooden.
Perfect. Perfect. And then I'll put all those in the show notes. And I really like the weekly newsletter. It's every time I get it, I'm like, ooh, makes me think. And I like that. Yeah. So this has just been awesome. Yeah. So I'll put all that in there. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that we didn't cover that we should have?
I feel like we're pretty comprehensive. I kind of can't really think of something. I mean, I think the only thing I'll say is that I really believe that everyone's unconditionally worthy. It's just about embracing it. It's just about sort of removing the barriers to connecting to your unconditional self-worth. And so, you know, if there's anybody out there who's like, yeah, but this isn't for me, I made a mistake or a failure that was like too big, too bad. It's like, no, actually, I still think unconditional self-worth is for you and is in you. And it's really just a process of connecting to it.
Nice. Nice. And I love that. And and that was the reason I asked, because I'm like, God, we covered so much. And yet I feel like we could cover so much more at the same time. So thank you so much for sharing everything you did.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
I hope that you could feel and hear her passion and enthusiasm in that conversation. She shared so many great pieces of wisdom. I had to challenge myself to narrow it down to my three insights for thriving. Here they are. Number one, take off the backpack that we sometimes carry with us over things that we've done in the past. And sometimes those things are decades in the past. But set the backpack down and unpack it and really look at it with fresh and compassionate eyes. If your best friend were carrying that backpack around and he or she shared it with you, what sort of compassion would you bring to that conversation? And don't you deserve that same level of compassion that you would give to a friend? Number two, related to the first one, but we can learn to carry the wisdom with us into the future and not the pain and the burden. The choices and the experiences that we had when we were younger might not be the choices that we'd make today, but they have given us our current wisdom. So learn from it and carry that with us. And number three, the four practices of unconditional self-worth. Number one, forgive yourself. And clearly, this can sometimes be challenging. That's why I really encourage you to check out Dr. Adia's course and her ebook. But forgive yourself. Two, self-acceptance. And this doesn't mean that we don't want to grow or that we don't want to continue to develop. But like she said, we can do that without making it a condition of loving ourselves. Number three, be there for yourself. And it makes me sad when she noted that sometimes we can abandon ourselves in those moments when times get tough. And that's probably the moment when we absolutely need ourselves the most to show up. And finally, number four, connect to supportive people. Think about those people who give you love and support. And I love how she said it. It's not like we're outsourcing our love to those people, right? We still have to give ourselves love, but we can accept the love from them. And conversely, if we are unfortunate enough to have those people in our lives that don't give us that kind of support, that's okay. But maybe we don't share our dreams with them or our goals. And if it gets, if it's toxic to her point, then of course, you know, setting boundaries is key to that. I really encourage you to check out her ebook, her newsletter, and her courses. The links are below in the show notes. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This life that we've been given is a gift. My hope is that no matter what comes your way, the good, the not so good, and the neutral, that you will choose to thrive. And my sincerest hope is that this podcast will help you do that.